Good morning, and welcome to this month's Hancock and Whitney Bank's economic update call. Hancock Bank and Whitney Bank provide this call as a monthly economic update for general informational purposes only. Information provided during this call is not intended to be investment advice. Opinions are those of the speakers and not necessarily those of Hancock Holding Company or its affiliates. Please email any questions to david.lundgren@hancockwhitney.com. Again, good morning. This is David Lundgren, Chief Investment Officer for Hancock Whitney Bank. Joining me this morning are Investment Directors Richard Chauvin, Greg Hileski, and Jeffrey Tangus. So as we normally do, we'll start off with a review of the U.S. economy, and then we're going to ask Richard Chauvin to talk a little bit about what's going on from an international perspective. But on the home front here in the U.S., start with some old news first. First quarter GDP reported last week, and I'd say it was somewhat on the disappointing side as the number came in at 2.3%, a little bit below where we had talked about on our last call. On the last call, we had said that we thought the number was going to come in around 2.5%. Not so far off, and we still have two more revisions to go, so we'll see where that number ends up. And if there's a silver lining to the number, I think if you look at it on a year-over-year basis, the economy grew at a solid 2.9% rate. Again, if you've been a long-time listener to the call, we've been in this environment since the financial crisis where the economy was growing around 2% the last year, as evidenced by the most recent print. That number is close to 3%. So some modest improvement there. When you dissect that number a little bit, there were a couple surprises within the number, some good news, some bad news. On the good news front, very encouraging that CapEx or capital expenditures were up a very healthy, unexpected 6.1%. So it looks like businesses are beginning to invest and spend. On the disappointing side was consumer spending. Consumer spending had been fairly strong. That number in the first quarter after a 4% plus fourth quarter, first quarter came in bit anemic at 1.1%. So, again, sort of a mixed bag, but all in all, I think looking back, the economy has done pretty well. Looking forward and specifically at the second quarter, and while we're only 1 month in here at May 1, the Atlanta Fed GDP now, which we've talked about in the past, that's a model that tries to predict the current quarter GDP growth based on actual hard data. And again, it's only 1 month in, but that number's at 4.1%. As of yesterday, that number is probably going to change and be lowered as a result of some releases this morning. And the 4.1, you know, that's very unlikely. I think a lot of economists feel that the second quarter will be more in line with the last three quarters of 2017, somewhere around 3%. But bottom line, the second quarter is off to a pretty good start. Let's go ahead and take a look at some of the drivers of growth for second quarter and possibly the remainder of 2018 and why we're mildly positive on the economy here in the U.S. First is employment. We continue to see some really solid, strong numbers on all fronts. When you look at measurements of employment, jobless claims or unemployment claims that were reported last week, reached the lowest level since 1969. So almost a 50-year low on unemployment claims. Later this week, we have a couple important prints or reports. We have unemployment rate, which has been around 4.1% for at least a couple months now. I think the street is expecting that number to hit 4% when it's released later this week. And then non-farm payrolls. You may remember last month. Pretty disappointing number. Some of it was related to weather. So we'll see if we see some improvement on new jobs or non-farm payrolls added when that number comes out on Friday. The other positive reason, and it's tied to employment, that we may see continued growth is both consumer spending and consumer confidence. No slippage in confidence. That number has been hovering around all-time highs for the last several months, and we don't really see that changing as long as employment stays strong, combined with less tax withholding. That should result in more consumer spending. As I mentioned, it really didn't materialize in first quarter, and part of the reason is that we actually saw an increase in the savings rate, and that could continue. That's something that we'll need to continue to monitor. The other positive is business confidence and business spending. I mentioned that CapEx number that we saw in the first quarter, which was very strong. Survey data for both small and large companies remains positive, despite the increased geopolitical and trade tensions. One of the more widely followed business surveys is the ISM Manufacturing Index, which came out 8 minutes ago. And that number is actually a little weaker than anticipated. Anything above 50 is considered to be positive. It looks like this is the lowest level that we've seen since July, and it's the fourth month in a row that we've seen that number dip a bit. Still a strong number at 57.3, but we're definitely seeing that number subside a little bit. So that's something we'll need to continue to monitor. Capital expenditures, more specifically, or business investment, as I mentioned, that was strong in the first quarter. And I think, bottom line here is lower tax rates combined with more favorable tax policy treatment regarding expensing of capital expenditures, I think will clearly provide a tailwind going forward on capital expenditures. And I think expectations remain pretty high for business going forward. But again, that's something we'll have to continue to monitor. So obviously lots of positives mentioned so far, but the economy clearly has some cross currents or challenges that could suppress growth or make for a more challenging environment. Two in particular are both housing and non-residential construction. Jeff's going to talk about interest rates in a few minutes, but obviously we've seen an uptick in rates. And generally, that is going to transfer over to mortgage rates. And they've climbed over 0.5% just since the end of the year. And I'd say home sales are they're growing for both existing and new home sales, but I'd say it's at a very moderate pace at best. Non-residential construction, really no growth here at all. And that's been the case for several years now. It'd be a positive to see some turnaround in that particular space. Obviously, that can help the economy. The other possible headwind, and again, Jeff's going to talk about this in a minute. I don't want to steal too much of his thunder. But the Fed continues to tighten. Longer rates have ticked up, and inflation slowly continues to grind higher. And those, if we continue to move at a moderate pace, I don't think it's much of a concern. But obviously interest expense and cost as a result of rising inflation are rising. And that's something that could, if we see that pace change to where the pace picks up some, could become a challenge to growth going forward. And really just to kind of sum all those comments up, I think the positives continue to outweigh the negatives from a U.S. economic perspective. And we continue to believe that the short-term environment has the potential to see growth closer to 3% on an inflation-adjusted basis. And again, in the short term, we feel chances of a recession are fairly low at this point in time, given the data that's presented to us. So with that, that's kind of your outlook on the U.S. economy. I'm going to turn it over to Richard Chauvin to hear what's going on from an economic standpoint internationally. Richard?
Thank you, Dave. I'm going to start with developed markets, particularly in Europe. Europe had a really nice, a very strong year last year in terms of economic growth, growing at something close to 3%, about 2.7, 2.8% last year, which doesn't sound, extremely high, but it's Europe's typically been a slow grower due to a lot of constraints on labor restrictions and mobility of people and resources in Europe. So it was a really good year last year, and what ended up happening from that is, since it was surprisingly good, it set a high bar for this year, and then lo and behold, in the first quarter, some disappointing numbers started to come in, both in terms of soft data and hard data. First, we saw business confidence begin to drop, and that may have been related to the repatriation concerns over the U.S. tax bill, where potentially a lot of foreign cash, foreign profits could be coming back into the U.S., which was certainly a concern in Europe, and that has really only just begun, more than likely. In addition, industrial production has deteriorated in the first quarter and recently. Some of that's weather-related. We saw the investor confidence index drop in April, led by expectations decline. Current conditions declined a little bit, but still they still remain fairly high. So it's really, to some extent, much ado about little. Europe still looks pretty strong, but it's coming off some great numbers last year. The decline in expectations in these investors' confidence surveys are probably due to some labor strikes that have been going on in Germany and in France, as well as the Italian political uncertainty over, an inability to form a permanent government due to the fighting factions in politics over there. Nobody can get a ruling majority. And that's a concern. In addition, we have these global trade tensions that, have been kind of fueled by President Trump's, trade negotiation tactics. We also had some bad weather in the first quarter in Europe, and it hurt the construction industry, which really kind of the numbers kind of plunged over there in February and March. And, again, that is believed to be mostly weather-related. So there's some headwinds in Europe that we're going to just quickly kind of run through. There's a strong euro. The strong euro currency is a negative for them, even though it has weakened a little bit just lately in the last several weeks, just a modest pullback. But the euro has been strong, and which of course makes their exports expensive. There's been fears of the European Central Bank eventually going on a tightening regime, and that's out there in the future, maybe in the second half of this year. But there's fears over that it's coming. There's worries over U.S. protectionism, which would be a negative for obviously for global trade. Again, we've had that lower business confidence numbers recently, and there's the political risk of how this Brexit is going to be negotiated, the exit of Britain from the European Union. But there's also plenty of good tailwinds that should help the economy. We've got very low rates over there. It's amazing how low the rates are. Matter of fact, until recent months, most rates were actually in the negative territory in Europe, and they've kind of moved back up in the low positive numbers, below 1% in most cases. We've got low inflation. We've got structural reforms going on in France, which are very healthy, even though some of the labor unions don't like it. Got good credit growth, jobs coming over to Europe from UK because of the Brexit moves. Very low credit spreads, which means companies can borrow cheaply. And we've got just a general, nicely growing economy globally, which helps the export markets in Europe and particularly in Germany, which is heavy exporter. So overall, we think we're probably going to see some decline in growth in Europe from last year, maybe down to 2.5%, just a couple of tenths lower, not bad at all. And that's up from 2% in 2016. So all in all, we think a lot of the worries about Europe are really, really overblown. Moving over to to Asia, talking about China and the emerging market countries in general. China is the largest emerging market country. It's been experiencing slower growth for about 6 months. Some of that's orchestrated actually by policy to ferret out some corruption and excessive lending practices, and which they're worried about. The some of the causes of this slowdown have been an increase in the Shanghai interbank offer rate, which is kind of like LIBOR, the rate at which banks borrow from each other over in that part of the world. We've also seen slowing government spending, again, by design, and an increase in the Taiwanese dollar as well, you know, putting some brakes on as well. Officially, China says its growth rate has been about 6.5 to 7% GDP growth, but if you look at the actual data coming out on a monthly basis, it's unlikely that the number is that high. We think some of the people who analyze this say that more than likely the growth in China is about 4% over the last 6 months versus about 8% in 2016. So a pretty noticeable slowdown has been going on, which has been some worry that it might get worse. But China's reacted to this slowing by dropping that SHIBOR rate, that Shanghai Interbank Offer Rate, which has come down a little bit. We've also seen a stabilization in the Taiwanese dollar, and we've also seen government spending picking up a little bit. So these moves probably won't reaccelerate growth, but it'll likely keep it from going down further, going lower. In terms of the emerging markets in general, we see that geopolitics, including the North Korean situation and trade concerns, as well as rising rates around the globe, particularly in the U.S., have weakened the emerging market on the equity side. Anybody who watches those markets has seen that happening. But we think the outlook is fairly positive for these markets, both economically and hopefully, we believe, in the intermediate longer term on the markets as well. We see the leading economic indicators on a composite basis looking positive. We see the Global Purchasing Managers Index still looking pretty strong. We see strength in the metals indices, the Commodity Research Bureau Metals Index, and crude oil prices, as we all know, have been trending higher. So all those bode well for the emerging market economies, which are, typically somewhat volatile and difficult to track and predict. We'll also note just, for those investors out there that the emerging markets are the most volatile market, but on the positive side, they're also the least expensive right now in terms of price to earnings. They're trading at about 12.5 times forward earnings or estimated earnings, which is much better, much lower than the U.S. at about 17.5 times and lower than Europe, or I should say developed markets, which include Europe and Canada primarily, at about 14 times earnings. So a pretty good relative bargain can be had in emerging markets, but again, those markets are volatile and not without risk, but certainly look like a long-term, perhaps a good investment opportunity for those long-term investors. That's my comments, Dave, on the global economy and markets.
Good stuff. Thank you, Richard. Appreciate it. Jeff, interesting month for bonds. We saw the 10-year move above 3%, I believe, since the first time since 2014. We also have the Fed meeting this week. Lots of inflation data coming in. What's going on in the bond market? Give us your outlook, please.
Well, you're right, Dave. We had flirted with 3% on the government 10-year treasury a couple times, but we were able to move through it this time and close higher. It's since moved back down under 3% just slightly, but still steady right around that 3% mark. Much like you talked about and Richard talked about, the move higher is generally speaking on better economic news and some better wage information, certainly some inflation data that's coming in. The Fed does meet tomorrow. They're going to review the progress on their on their rate increase program that they've been in now for a year and a half. it looks like tomorrow will be a quiet meeting, that they will not raise rates. The best guess right now is they raise in June and they raise in September. That'll be three raises for this year, with about a 50-50 chance that they raise a fourth time in December right now. So that's still in doubt. It's not clear. There are many on the FOMC that think four rate increases are warranted. We know that from the dot plot in the past. But still, we'll have to see how the economic data plays out for the rest of this year before we know for sure. It's certainly one of the things that's weighed on the Fed's mind lately has been some of the inflation data that's come out. We've been waiting for a long time to start to see some consistent wage gains. We did see some positive first quarter wage gains that the Fed was, I'm sure, glad to see, increases of about 2.7% over last year for the quarter. So that's something that I think the Fed has really been wanting to see as they think about future rate increases. Another really milestone that we hit is that the Fed, as we've talked about in meetings past, was trying hard to get inflation up to 2%, and it looks like they've hit their goal. Their preferred measure, the personal consumption expenditures, moved into that 2% range, so the Fed's not really ready to declare victory, but it is a sign of a healthy economy, and it doesn't appear that that inflation is headed dramatically higher from where we are now, although there are a few folks out there that might that want to make that case. The long-term inflation expectations have moved a little higher, and that's what's impacted Treasury rates over the last month and pushed that 10-year up to 3%, whereas we had been something below 2%, say 1.8% to 1.9% for long-term inflation expectations. We moved above that now. We're about 2.15% for the long-term inflation expectations. So a little bit over 2%, but not dramatically so, and something that I think the Fed is glad to see, that people are starting to build in or price in some longer-term inflation expectations. A little bit of inflation is good for the economy. What is really bad for the economy is deflation or really disinflation. Those are things that have all sorts of terrible effects on the economy and on the financial services industry in general. So the Fed is glad to see that risk moving into the rearview mirror, at least at this point. So it really, you know, it's a sign that the economy is on track, that things are doing better. Certainly, we all know the unemployment numbers are very good. So that the Fed really is in a good spot right now. I think they can look out and see that they've got at least one, maybe two more increases. Keep in mind also that a lot of what the Fed is doing right now is really in preparation for the next downturn in the economy. Dave talked about the fact that we don't really see anything, and neither does the Fed at this point, on the horizon, but we know at some point some economic softness will come, and the Fed wants to be able to have some room to drop rates in juice the economy if they need to when that time comes. So that's a lot of the motivation that's behind the Fed right now, is preparing, having some bullets in the gun, if you will, to shoot when the economy does soften up next time. So at this point, from an inflation standpoint, we see some pockets of it. It's certainly not everywhere. Richard talked about metals being a little bit higher. I thought it was interesting. Dave touched on the housing market and how that's faring. Its mortgage rates are now on a 30-year basis about 4.8%. That's probably a full percentage point over where they bottomed out at the bottom of the cycle. But still affordable, generally speaking. But that is on top of some considerably higher construction costs. I looked back this morning to look at lumber prices, and lumber prices have actually quadrupled from the low in 2009 at the housing market hit bottom. So from about $138 per thousand board feet to almost $550 per thousand board feet, lumber prices are up pretty dramatically. So that, and combined with the mortgage rates being higher, certainly makes the affordability factor in the housing market a little more difficult. That's important because housing is a big part of the economy, certainly, and a good indication of a healthy economy if we've got a good, healthy housing market. So it is going to be a little bit more of a stretch for people to afford houses these days. But certainly with a good economy, good employment, and rising wages, it's still very affordable for people to buy houses these days. Richard talked a little bit, I think, about mentioned LIBOR rates. One of the things that was it's really critical in the financial markets because a lot of lending, variable rate or floating rate lending, is based off of LIBOR. We've seen LIBOR sort of top out and moderate somewhat after rising dramatically over the last several months. So I think a lot of people are glad to see that LIBOR has sort of stabilized and is starting to behave in line with what the rest of the financial markets are doing these days. Corporate bonds in general they stabilized. Corporate spreads rose pretty dramatically over the last couple months as the stock market saw some volatility. Corporate bond spreads widened pretty dramatically. That also reversed itself a little bit during the month, so that the corporate spreads have stabilized and things are starting to quiet down there a little bit. So generally, Dave, I would sum it up by saying that the economy is in a good place. The Fed is really in a good place. We've got two more rate increases teed up for this year with a possible fourth in December if necessary. But all in all, a good report.
All right. Thank you, Jeff. Greg, let's wrap it up with the stock market. And it was a pretty volatile month, but maybe not as volatile as we saw in the first quarter. And a lot of ups and downs, but at the end of the month, we just finished barely positive for the S&P 500. If you could maybe briefly give us a little color around the month and then where we go from here. Thanks, Greg.
Yeah, let's start out with earnings since we've been all waiting to see what the impact would be, tax cuts, so on and so forth. But over half the companies in the S&P 500 have reported actual results. And right now the figures indicate that about 79% of companies have reported a positive earnings surprise. And for those, that's kind of a term we use to point out that companies did better than Wall Street's expectations and can have a generally positive impact on the company's stock price. So numbers also indicate that about 74% of companies have reported a positive sales surprise. So again, I think we've all talked about how things aren't, booming, but it's not a bad place. Some companies have released earnings guidance for the second quarter, looking ahead, and it appears nearly equally split, with about 26 companies so far issuing negative earnings per share indications and about 21 companies issuing positive earnings per share guidance. So we'll see how that plays out during the quarter. I think one of the things to point out is that the economy continues to do well, as we've all pointed out different aspects of it. And although the stock market's a reflection of how things are doing, it's also what we call a discounting mechanism that reflects current conditions, but as well as future conditions. And I believe that is what is injecting some of the volatility into markets. Inflation expectations perhaps may be the main driver, implying that it would prompt the Fed to raise rates higher than expected. And that certainly could have an impact on future earnings for companies, raising, the cost of money. Certainly there are plenty of other issues as well from a trade and geopolitical standpoint, but I think the market is focused in on that. Valuations, still on the higher side from a historical perspective. On a reported earnings basis, the S&P 500 earnings per share, still rank in the top 20%. On the high side, looking at monthly PEs going back to 1948, putting us a little over 20 times earnings. Of course, the market, again, is always looking forward, so looking on a forward basis, the PE is a little bit more reasonable at just over 16.3 times earnings. still putting it above, though, its five-year average of 16.1 and above the 10-year average of about 14.3. So, again, things look pretty positive, but I think, again, the market is focusing on things out not 6, 9, 12 months ahead as opposed to what's going on in the economy right now. In terms of performance, as you mentioned, April was mostly a sideways month regarding performance. We saw enough peaks and valleys to suggest the market looking for some direction. Volatility actually declined over the course of the month, spiking up above an index value of 24, but gradually declining at month end with a value of about 15.9. As you said, larger cap stocks, S&P 500 just managed to end on a positive note, only up about 0.4%. Mid-cap stocks actually were negative for the period, turning down slightly in a minus 0.3% return. And then small caps actually did better. By the S&P 600 beat both large and mid-cap stocks, turning in a 1% return for April. The growth versus value split divergence in performance continues to be there. Value stocks have trailed growth dramatically over the past year. We saw value beating growth for the month, though, of April, which is, another turn. Value was up actually 0.5% relative to growth, which was up slightly lower at a 0.3%. But value still has a long way to go to catch up with growth. Growth was up 17.7% for the past 12 months, and value was up 8.3%. So there's a huge gap that value has to overcome if it's ever going to beat growth. So that may take some time. International markets, for the most part, turned in positive performance. The S&P developed ex-U.S. index was up 2.2%, with most other developed indexes also turning in similar performance around the 2 to 3% area. The areas that do so well were, as you might expect, emerging and frontier markets that were negative, with returns of a minus 0.8% and a minus 1.9% respectively. In terms of sector performance, we saw an even split with about half the sectors falling in positive territory and the other half in negative. Best sectors in April were energy up 9.4%, huge showing, followed by consumer discretionary stocks up 2.4%, and lastly, utilities up 2.1%. On the negative front, worst performing sector was consumer staples with a minus 4.3% return, followed by industrials at a minus 2.8%, and lastly, telecom down 1.0%. So I think we probably got a few more months until the market can focus in on what the future holds. So I think, we may still have some sideways months. Hopefully so, with the earnings coming in very positive, we'll see some kind of a move. We were anticipating, I think, on past calls that we might see a nice pop in the market, but I think some of the future events might be putting a ceiling on that at this point. So that's all I've got.
All right. Thank you, Greg, and thank you, everyone, for joining us this morning. Join us next month when we'll host our call on June 5th. Thank you, everyone.